August 10th, room 306, Pontoon Street.
Of a series on the anatomy of Stalinism. And to introduce our speaker, I'm going to borrow from the bourgeois press. About a year or so ago, the Saturday Evening Post called Tom Carey the grizzled old Trotskyist, and I think that's a good introduction for Tom.
For the party, in the party, for some 35 odd years. But I must confess, never under these circumstances where the audience is in a position to look down upon the speaker. Which is a handicap. Now we're going to discuss Stalinism, and I'm afraid in the time at our disposal, not as exhaustively as what I would have liked. The Socialist Workers' Party, the Trotskyist movement, has been immersed in the study and in the combat of Stalinism for its entire life. And no movement in the world has said more, contributed more, and cast more illumination on this subject and the problem which it confronted the working class movement with than Trotsky and the movement which he founded. It was one of Trotsky's unique contributions to the theory of Marxism. Unique in the sense that here you had a participant in the first successful proletarian revolution, which established the first worker state in all of history. Participated in the victory, played a leading role in the consummation of the victory, witnessed then the subsequent degeneration of the state, and subjected the phenomena to an incisive analysis while it was happening. Not only an analysis, but offering at each stage a counter-program of action. Trotsky first analyzed the growth of the Stalinist bureaucracy, designated it as a bureaucratic caste. That is, it played no vital role in the new relations and forms of production established by the October Revolution. This caste had a dual function, which gave it its contradictory character. And if any of you young comrades are interested in studying the dialectic, especially that aspect of it that deals with contradiction, I would urge you to study Stalinism from the beginning. The most contradictory historical phenomena in all of history. It has a dual function. On the one side, its function is to defend the property form, that is, the nationalized property, established by the October Revolution. And in that sense, plays a progressive role. On the other hand, as a reactionary political tendency which usurped the power of the workers in Russia. It functions as an agency of world imperialism in the world working class movement, and thereby plays a counter-revolutionary role. Trotsky analyzed Stalinism in the period of its rise and development, designated it as bureaucratic centrism. Now, he was talking here about the party, the Bolshevik Party. It is on this question of bureaucratic centrism that I'm going to devote a major part of my first talk. Because it's around this concept and this designation that there developed differences in the world Trotskyist movement that persists to this very day. The comrades will recall the bulletin which contains the resolution adopted by the last World Congress and Joe Hansen's report. They will have noted that one of the amendments made to our draft resolution was the addition of the term bureaucratic centrism to our draft. Now, this may sound like quibbling, like an exercise in semantics. We're not interested in that sort of thing. In my opinion, what is involved is a theoretical error that has led to an incorrect political policy and can lead to very serious differences unless it's corrected. And so I want to deal with the problem in much greater detail than would seem to be warranted in both its historical and theoretical aspect. And so you will understand that I'm isolating from many other facets of Stalinism in order to avoid going off on a tangent, in order to be able to grapple adequately with this theoretical problem. Now, prior to World War II, Trotsky predicted that the war would result in one of two alternatives: either the extension of the world revolution or the crushing of the Soviet Union. But history proved more contradictory and complicated than even the genius of Trotsky was able to foresee. It ended in neither of these two alternatives. Prior to World War II, Stalinism developed and was consolidated on the basis of an unending series of defeats. And as Trotsky explained, each one of these defeats served to strengthen the bureaucracy and to defeat the left opposition. Stalinism then was characterized as the organizer of defeat. And this entered into our concept of Stalinism and is repeated in one form or another in the various documents that have issued out of the congresses and conventions of the Trotskyist movement ever since. Instead of the crushing of the Soviet Union, with the end of the war, a new phenomenon made its appearance. The Yugoslav Revolution, led by a Stalinist party. In defiance of Stalin's treaties with the Allies at Yalta, Tehran, Potsdam, etc., etc. Two, the establishment in Eastern Europe, first of coalition regimes, and then deformed workers' states. After the beginning of the Cold War, the coalition regimes were brushed aside by the Soviet power, which had its troops in most of these countries, and workers' states, deformed workers' states, were established. Now we make a distinction between a degenerated workers' state and a deformed workers' state. I'm not going to be able to go into any lengthy explanation over many of these events which the older comrades are self-understood. I leave that to the discussion period. If I refer to some historical event or some problem that arose and don't deal with it adequately, you can raise it in the discussion. Because I'm going to leave many gaps. As I say, I'm going to concentrate on trying to clarify at least this one point. The differences between a degenerated worker state and deformed worker state is a deformed worker state was never healthy to begin with and so couldn't have degenerated. The Soviet Union we designate as a degenerated worker state because it did begin as a healthy worker state under Lenin and Trotsky and the early Bolshevik regime and subsequently degenerated. Those are the distinctions. Both are based upon the socialist forms of property. That is nationalized property and the monopoly of foreign trade and so forth and so on. The third development was the Chinese Revolution, led by the Mao wing of the world Stalinist movement. Now the problem that arose in the Trotskyist movement at that time was how to reconcile our view of Stalinism as counter-revolutionary through and through with this new phenomenon, a phenomenon of Stalinist party leading, ostensibly leading, successful revolutions that established workers' states. It seemed, or it would seem, as though we were confronted with one of two alternatives. Either to concede that on the basis of historical experience, that is primarily Yugoslavian China, which developed on the basis of a surging mass movement, as distinct from the Eastern European countries, which were established by virtue of the power of the Soviet Red Army, that on the basis of this historical experience, either that our view of Stalinism as counter-revolutionary was incorrect, or that the Yugoslav and Chinese Communist parties were not Stalinist, or not strictly Stalinist, or not exactly Stalinist. There's a matter of degree here. There was, of course, another choice, one embraced by a wing of the Cochranite faction. I assume you're all familiar with the Cochranite split of 1953. One wing that believed that Stalinism constituted the wave of the future, a concept advanced by Pablo in his thesis of centuries of deformed workers' states. He advanced the thesis sometime in 1951, I believe, that the whole course of revolutionary development would have to go through Stalinism and would then take the form of the establishment of deformed workers' states on an international scale as a necessary stage in the unfolding of the socialist revolution. Now, this theory was rejected by the SWP and by a majority of the international movement. And the Cochranites later first split with the SWP and then with the International, and precisely over this question. After grappling with the problem of post-World War II Stalinism, the majority of the International adopted the view that the Yugoslav and Chinese CP were not strictly Stalinist. How then to characterize this new phenomenon? At the Fourth World Congress held in 1954, remember when the split in the International took place in 1953. In 1954, the what were then known as the Pabloites had held a World Congress in which they adopted a resolution entitled The Rise and Decline of Stalinism, which states, and I quote, "There is no contradiction between the fact that on the one hand the Yugoslav CP and the Chinese CP have been able to lead a revolution victoriously and independently of the Kremlin, and have in these instances ceased to be Stalinist parties in the proper meaning of the term. Two, from this determination, there follows the ineluctable conclusion, and I quote, since both the Chinese CP and to a certain extent also the Yugoslav CP are in reality bureaucratic centrist parties, and I want you to pay close attention because we can trace, as I say, the beginning of the difference to this analysis in 1954. You recall we had our own revolution on the Soviet Union in 1955, in which this formulation does not occur. That the Yugoslav and the Chinese CP are in reality bureaucratic centrist parties, which, however, still find themselves under the pressure of the revolution in their countries. We do not call upon the proletariat of these countries to constitute new revolutionary parties or to prepare a political revolution in these countries. End of quote. And it follows, theoretically, if these parties are bureaucratic centrists in the sense that Trotsky applied this term to the early period of the Stalinist bureaucracy in the Russian Communist Party, then, as Trotsky did at that time, he didn't call for a new revolutionary party and a political revolution. He called for reforming the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. And to win over the Communist International to a revolutionary, socialist, revolutionary Marxist position. So it would follow that given in the context in which the designation had been applied in the Trotskyist movement up to this point, given that understanding, it would follow that opposition to the political revolution for reform of the parties in the China and in Yugoslavia. And so they continue, and I quote, "We are working toward the constitution of a left tendency within the Yugoslav Communist Party and within the Chinese Communist Party, a tendency which will be able, in connection with the development of the world revolutionary rise, to assure and to lead a new stage forward in the revolution in these two countries." Now, from that day in 1954 to the present, I say, to the period of the last World Congress, in which they amended our resolution on China to add bureaucratic centrism, the comrades of the present majority in the International obstinately cling to the formula of bureaucratic centrism, although today coupling it with the call for a political revolution. Either failing or refusing to recognize the obvious contradiction involved. Now let us pursue the question further, because it's an important question. At the Second World Congress of the Fourth International, after reunification, we read in the resolution entitled The Sino-Soviet Conflict and the Crisis of the International Communist Movement. All these documents are available, by the way, in the internal information or educational bulletin. The following characterization of the Maoist regime. Now, this document was published in the ISR in the spring of 1966 under the heading The Sino-Soviet Conflict. This is the resolution adopted by that convention. And I want to quote. The resolution states, "The Chinese Communist Party cannot be considered to have been a Stalinist party in the strict sense of the term." As you see, you have the same kind of a formulation. That is, subordinated since the 20s to the bureaucratic leadership of the Kremlin. The Mao leadership that had its own personality, the Mao leadership had its own personality, and its policies, although often marked in practice by compromises with the Moscow leadership, which led to the gravest deviations, had a generally centrist character leaning towards the left. Now you have bureaucratic centrism leaning towards the left. I continue the quote. "The Mao leadership was also shaped by long years of difficult struggles, and it underwent the impact of the great popular revolution that brought it to power." They continue. "Thus, in the light of the international relationship of forces, the dynamics of the Chinese Revolution and the special features of the Maoist leadership, it can be concluded that the bureaucratism in China, bad as it is in and of itself, is not the same as the bureaucratism that developed in the Soviet Union into a powerfully consolidated caste." And they conclude, and I quote, "It was Trotsky's view that the Stalinist experience, viewed in all its concreteness, was due to a completely special combination of forces and circumstances. His forecast that it would never be repeated still holds." Now, they refer here, of course, to what I alluded to in the beginning. That is, Stalinism in the Soviet Union arose on the basis of a unending series of defeats in which the Soviet Union was isolated, turned back in upon itself. And it's true that we cannot anticipate that precisely these historical circumstances under which Stalinism developed in the Soviet Union would be repeated at a subsequent period of historical development. I think it'd be very safe in ruling that out, but that does not settle the question of the character of the Maoist regime in China. Not at all. Now, here, the recurrence of the formula bureaucratic centrism came as a surprise to us, because it had not appeared in the original draft of the resolution and was added at the Congress. We had no opportunity not only to object, we didn't know that they were even thinking of adding it to the resolution at the Second World Congress. And there was an exchange of correspondence on the matter. And I would like to quote from this exchange of correspondence to clarify again the way the problem developed historically. The only way you can understand it by viewing it that way. We wrote and said, since receiving the final draft of the resolution on the Sino-Soviet conflict on February 21, the same day, incidentally, on which we received the issue of the quatrième in which it was published, we have held a number of discussions on the problem that was created for us by the considerable modifications that were introduced into the draft submitted to the Congress. The most significant changes involved the characterization of the Mao leadership. In the draft resolution, the Mao leadership was held to come under the general category of Stalinism, although with peculiarities of its own due to the influence of the Chinese Revolution. That was our formulation. The direction of the changes introduced into the draft resolution was to substitute for this characterization of the Mao leadership as left centrist. And then we quote this section which I just read to you. And we asked for an explanation. Was it just somebody's afterthought that you threw it in because it had been in a previous resolution? Did you imply by that the question of the political revolution was again called into question? We didn't know. And we received a reply from one of the leading comrades in the International as follows, in which he deals with the concept of bureaucratic centrism, which in my opinion is incorrect. Quote, on the question of the estimation of the Mao leadership, Art will write you what have been the proposals of the United Secretariat who took up your letter. On the discussion procedure, and Livio will write you at length on the unfortunate circumstances which led to the different formulation. He was the reporter on this question. But I should like to insist again upon the question of the very slight differences in the two formulas, that is, the very slight differences the two formulas really make. I really considered that these differences were very slight between our formula and theirs. Quote, for the old man, that is for Trotsky, Stalinism is a specific variant of centrism. You, and in parenthesis, you know as I do the many quotations from him where he formulates this idea. We completely agree that Mao's party is a centrist party, strongly influenced by the Stalinist origins and grooming of its leadership. If we use the formula centrist, generally inclined to be left centrist, it is for the very concrete, specific reason, to wit, that the main historical characteristic of the CCP is the fact that they took power in 1949 and overthrew capitalism in the biggest country in the world. Whatever may be our specific criticism of their innumerable shortcomings, on which I believe we generally agree, the basic characterization must conform above all to that basic fact. And when you characterize them basically as a Stalinist party, instead of a left-centrist party of Stalinist origins and many bureaucratic traits inherited from Stalinism, then you come, of course, to the somewhat paradoxical conclusion that a basically Stalinist party is capable of overthrowing capitalists against the furious opposition of Stalinism, of Stalin, and the Soviet bureaucracy. The whole notion of Stalinism is then turned upside down. I'm going to read the whole thing and then we'll dissect it. May I remind you of the origin of that formula, centrism, generally tending towards the left in our movement. Now, it's very important because history and historical development plays a very important role in the determination of our terminology as well as the ideas behind the terminology. That's what we're concerned about. Not the semantics, not the words, not the expression, not the term. What ideas lurk behind the terminology? If I'm not mistaken, he goes on, it was used for the first time in a resolution which I wrote myself on the characterization of the Yugoslav workers' state. That's true, it was. and which was adopted by the SWP sometime in 1950 or 51, which is not true. We were at that time, at the beginning of the struggle, not only about the class nature of the Glacis countries, that is the buffer states, Eastern Europe, but also the whole re-evaluation of the relations between capitalism, Stalinism, and world revolution in the light of the post-war events. And if the comrades who read the documents would testify that it was a rather lengthy and a very rich discussion in our movement, because these were new problems, problems unanticipated, as I said, not only by us, by Trotsky, by everyone else. And it occasioned a very long discussion with which finally we arrived at a I thought, but it appears not quite. It was especially against Pablo's basic tendency that I insisted strongly upon the need to characterize the Yugoslav CP as a left-centrist party and not a Stalinist party. Whatever may have been the Stalinist nature of their habits, traditions, and attitudes towards many questions. Because I wanted to conserve the notion of the counter-revolutionary character of Stalinism. As Stalin had actually opposed the setting up of the Yugoslav workers' state, as he had done in China, the idea of calling the parties who had overthrown capitalism in those countries through a revolution to be it a very distorted one, Stalinist seemed to be rather far-fetched and included the danger of changing our basic characterization of Stalinism, which is not simply any form of workers' bureaucracy, but the specific movement born from the usurpation of power in the Soviet Union by the Soviet bureaucracy. I think the arguments which held at that time still hold today, and that it is much more embarrassing from the point of view of upholding our traditional program and identity to call parties who lead victorious, be it distorted revolutions, Stalinist, than to call them left-centrist parties of Stalinist origin and tradition, and with strong bureaucratic inclinations. And if you don't change this characterization in the case of Yugoslavia, it becomes all the more embarrassing to change it in the case of China. For nobody could argue that the Yugoslavs are more to the left than the Chinese centrists. That for sure. No, you can't argue that. Let's probe a little further. Trotsky settled accounts with the concept bureaucratic centrism in an article which was published in the ISR in the summer of 1956. It was republished in the ISR in 56. It was first published in 1935. It was an article entitled "The Workers' State and the Question of Thermidor and Bonaparte." Now, if you read Joe Hansen's article in the International Information Bulletin number 4, June 1970, on the differences between the two documents on the Cultural Revolution, you will find that he there discusses, in some detail, the development of Trotsky's views on this question of bureaucratic centrism. And I'm not going to repeat what everything that he says there. I'm just going to amplify, if that's the correct term, on some of the arguments. In his article, Trotsky begins by saying that this question of Thermidor played a very important role in the controversies within the left opposition in the Soviet Union in the very early period, 1924 to 1927. There was a tendency in the left opposition which called themselves the Democratic Centralism Group, which held that Thermidor had already been accomplished in the Soviet Union. And they interpreted Thermidor as meaning the success of the counter-revolution, that the counter-revolution had conquered in the Soviet Union, had prevailed, and that what was necessary was a new social revolution in the Soviet Union in order to reestablish the property form and the Leninist Party, which led the revolution to victory in 1917. The left opposition split over this question. The Democratic Centralism Group split from the left opposition over not so much the controversy over the analogy with Thermidor, but over the political conclusions that were drawn. The left opposition held that the basic economic conquest of the October Revolution still remained. The social conquest still remained. The nationalized property, the monopoly foreign trade, and that this was the basis upon which the bureaucracy rested. And that therefore, to call for a social revolution meant to turn your back on the conquests, on the remaining conquests, instead of struggling to preserve and to extend them and to restore Leninist democratic norms in the Bolshevik Party. It was essential to say to the analogous, I might say, with all proportions guarded, to the dispute we had with the petty bourgeois opposition in 1939 over the characterization of the Soviet Union, whether it was a degenerated workers' state or whether it was bureaucratic collectivism. Trotsky at that time said, well, it'd be foolish for us to engage in a big factional dispute over a terminological difference if that's all that was involved, was what to call this thing, this new thing, this monstrous thing that had emerged from the first proletarian revolution in all history. But it turned out to be more than that. Just so long as we agree on the political conclusions of the necessity of defending the Soviet Union against imperialist attack. And it was precisely on that there could not be any agreement, and so the split occurred. Let me just, maybe for those who are not too familiar with French revolutionary history, just indicate what Thermidor meant in the revolutionary movement. It refers to the ninth Thermidor, when the reaction triumphed and proceeded to execute the plebeian Jacobins, and led them almost directly to the establishment of the Bonapartism. Bonaparte, Napoleon Bonaparte, first as the first consul and then as the emperor. But as Trotsky points out in this article, that the analogy, like all analogies, must be guarded. That the reaction of ninth Thermidor in France did not restore feudal property relations. It was true. It was a political reaction. A political reaction which destroyed the plebeian revolutionaries who made the revolution and who were trying to drive it forward. But the reaction occurred on the basis of the preservation of the property forms established by the French Revolution. That is bourgeois property forms, capitalist property forms. It never returned to feudalism. In fact, Bonaparte, in his then various military enterprises throughout Europe, never found an ally in feudalism. In fact, felt compelled to overthrow feudalism and establish bourgeois property relations in those countries in which he conquered, as the Soviet Union was compelled to do after during the course of World War II. We'll go into that later, with Latvia, Estonia, those countries which were structurally assimilated to the Soviet Union. He said that this analogy had limits. Now, when this comrade in this letter refers to Trotsky's use of the term bureaucratic centrism, he must refer to it only in the period prior to 1931. Because after this article was written in 1935, you cannot find anywhere in Trotsky, I have not been able to find it, any reference to bureaucratic centralism. In this article, he refers to the Bonapartist regime of Stalin. Stalin was Bonapartist, not bureaucratic centralist. And then he sums up the Soviet bureaucracy, I'm quoting, Bolshevist in quotation marks, in its traditions, but in reality having long since renounced its traditions, petty bourgeois in its composition and spirit, was summoned to regulate the antagonism between the proletariat and the peasantry, between the worker state and world imperialism. He says, this was the social basis of bureaucratic centralism. Let me repeat again. To regulate the antagonism between the proletariat and peasantry as in the Soviet Union, between the workers, state, and world imperialists. He says this was the social base of bureaucratic centralism, of its zigzag, its power, its weakness, and its influence over the world proletarian movement, which has been so fatal. As the bureaucracy becomes more independent, as more and more power is concentrated in the hands of a single person, the more does bureaucratic centralism turn into Bonapartism. Trotsky uses bureaucratic centralism in his criticism of the draft program, published in the book entitled The Third International After Lenin. You recall, that was written in 1927. The Sixth World Congress was held in 1928. The draft program was adopted by the Sixth World Congress. But in 1927, 1928, although the left opposition had been expelled from the Communist Party of the Soviet Union and from all the parties of the Comintern, the Communist International, Trotsky and the left opposition insisted that they, or we, I should say, that we remain part of the Communist International and of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, despite the fact we were expelled. That our program was for reform, reform of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union and reform of the Communist International. It was only after Hitler took power in 1933, after the third period insanity, after the Communist Party permitted Hitler to march to power without a struggle, that Trotsky declared the Communist International is dead, and we therefore have to begin to build a new international. The Communist Party of the Soviet Union is dead. Therefore, we've got to have a political revolution and a new party, a party of the Fourth International in the Soviet Union. From that day forward, Trotsky did not use the term bureaucratic centralism to characterize the Soviet bureaucracy. Bonapartism, yes, in terms of a much more descriptive, if I would say, character. Syphilis of the labor movement, yes. Not bureaucratic centralism. So when they tell us, when they tell us that it's a departure on our part to abandon bureaucratic centralism, which plays such a part in the whole history of the development of the ideas of the opposition, we say, just a moment, comrade. That's not history. That is not history, not as we've learned it. Trotsky fixes the date, beginning the Thermidorian reaction as the year 1924. That was the beginning of the, and I want to quote. He says, the year 1924, that was the beginning of the Soviet Thermidor. And then he concludes, the Thermidor of the great Russian Revolution is not before, but already far behind. The Thermidorians can celebrate approximately the 10th anniversary of their victory. Now, I puzzled over this when I read it, and I reread it, and puzzled over it some more. It was Trotsky trying to say here that in this drawing up of a balance sheet of the dispute within the left opposition over the question of Bonapartism and Thermidor, that the change had taken place not in 33, but already in 1924. That is, already in 1924 it was no longer correct to refer to the Stalinist regime as bureaucratic centers. It's not very clear, but there's a certain amount of logic to it. If Thermidor began in 1924, then what happened to bureaucratic centrism? You could say, well, Thermidor was a process of reaction that achieved a period of qualitative change in 1933. That was the historical test. The historical test was 1933. But why not 1927, the Chinese Revolution, which was defeated because of the character of the intervention of the Kremlin in China? These are some of these problems that you younger comrades will have to grapple with in your study of the development of the ideas of the left opposition of Trotskyism and Stalinism on a world scale. I just present it to you as a problem. But I know this, while that may be a problem, there's no problem about what happened in 1933. And Trotsky said the Communist International is dead. In the same next sentence, he says, we must proceed to build the Fourth International. We're getting run out of time.